Thereafter, chairperson, we were able to identify 55 projects that were bankable, that were part of past feasibility studies, and that some project preparation has been done. So out of the 276, we identified about 55. And they're still working on the balance of the project for the second phase of the rollout of the infrastructure plan. We further identified and looked at social infrastructure, especially the backlog, and we developed 12 projects.
It looks like the minister is not very audible.
Okay, just a little bit forward. Yes, I'm trying
to... Inform your side chair. Yeah, all of us can hear you. It's your side chair. Inform your side chair.
Is that better now?
There is a connectivity problem.
Yeah, it is raining cats and dogs in Cape Town, and it does affect the signal. But I will just try and raise my voice a bit, Chairperson. Okay, am I audible now?
Yeah, I think it's from your side.
Is it on my side?
It's your side, Chair. Ask myself, I can see everything.
Okay, no, I think then it does make sense. Let me then try to...
But it's from your side, Chair.
Continue then.
Thank you.
Okay.
Can continue, Minister.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Then we also look at the backlog of social infrastructure within our country. And we came up with 12 projects that will lead to also mass employment projects like rural bridges, rural roads, the cleaning of our cities and towns and townships, kind of labor-intensive projects that we could implement to help people to deal with the unemployment, but also to create more employment opportunities. Then on the 27th of May, we put the plan before Cabinet, including the new methodology of screening and assessing and evaluating projects, and the 55 projects plus the 12 special projects, like I told them. And it was approved by Cabinet on the 27th of May. What followed thereafter, Chairperson, was a symposium that was convened by President Cyril Ramaphosa on the 23rd of June. Because it became also very clear to us, with the backlog of infrastructure, that there's not enough resources in the system, to fund all of these projects. And we have to start looking at other sources from the private sector, from the financial institutions, to assist us to invest in our future. So on the 23rd of June, over 600 financial institutions, local and international, the president presented the plan to them. And we also did some pitching sessions with individual financial institutions. And Dr. Ramaphosa will speak to the details, but by going outside of the fiscus to look for funding to fund the infrastructure plan, we've been able to secure commitments of this over 403 billion rand. So where are we now? After the 23rd of June, when it became clear that we will be able to get some money from the fiscus, some money from regional and international bankers. We then, on the 24th of July, we then presented a 50 of the 55 projects plus the 12. So it's all together 62 projects that we presented on the 24th of July. Now, honourable members will know that in terms of the Infrastructure Development Act, especially Schedule 2, that when you submit these projects, the project then qualifies for the fast track. new infrastructure. We also have included in the plan maintenance and the repairs of existing infrastructure. Then we also look at how can we repurpose redundant infrastructure. How can we use government-owned buildings that is redundant now to repurpose them, like for instance to student accommodation. That is just one example. And then also we design as part of the plan expediting the maintenance and repairs of existing infrastructure. So in terms of the streamlined and accountable the president has set a clear delivery target related to the value of the money that we need, that we have to bring transparency in relation to the performance of the implementation of this plan, also accountability of the professionals and contractors, as well as government. But we also realize that if government cannot do it alone, that we do need to get the partnership of the private sector. Then we have also established a monitoring, review, and insight and infrastructure intelligence. Then key to the plan, honorable members, is the transformation and spatial justice. You know, we need to deal with the appropriate spatial planning. We need to begin to look at integrating of our cities. But the issue of skills and how do you transfer skills, empowerment and job creation are the forefront of the plan. It is not just about the construction alone, but how we can upskill our nation in the built environment. And then, of course, with the world as it is today, we need to get used to using new methodology, and also that we need to incorporate the green economy. We need to overlay our infrastructure plan with the impact of climate change today in the rest of the world, and therefore our building methodology also needs to take in consideration the new technology that we can use today rather than just the old brick and mortar. Chairperson, at the end of the presentation, what I will do is to just give you the operational side of where we are now, what is done, what is the work in progress. In the month of October, we need to go and give a report to Cabinet. But we also committed to give the portfolio committee, the standing committee, on a quarterly basis, we can also give you an update. If Dr. Ramaphosa has joined us, I will now ask him to take over chairperson with your permission. Thank you very much.
May I proceed, Chair? Hello? Chairperson, mic is off.
Yeah, I can hear you, Dr. Ramaphosa. Maybe there's a problem with the mic.
I was establishing with the chair if I may proceed. So I take it for granted that I'm permitted to proceed. No, thank you very much, Honorable Minister, Deputy Minister, and honorable members, as indicated, my name is Hosienzo Ramaphosa. I think the minister has succeeded in providing a framing, if you like, in relation to the work of infrastructure. And as the minister indicated, I think we see infrastructure as a flywheel that is going to help us in the recovery effort. So I'm going to give you the details. So I'm not sure if there's someone who's going to be beaming the presentation on my behalf, because we were instructed to send it through sometime last week, about 2 weeks ago. So I'm not sure if I'm navigating.
Yes, Doc, we are navigating you.
okay. No, thank you very much. So as indicated, I think the minister has succeeded in providing a context. Are you sharing the slides?
Yes, Doc. Good afternoon, honorable members. I'm not sure if the screen is showing. The presentation is showing on everyone's screen.
I can't see it myself.
It is showing. What you just need to do is to ensure that Dr. Rabokopa switches on this video, because he's also addressing the public on behalf of the minister. Thank you.
Oh, no, thank you very much. But I can't see the presentation.
We can do it.
Okay, so I'm going to speak blind. So on the outline there, so I hope that you'll help me with the navigation. So we thought that we must reflect also on the economic reality so that we were able to situate the conversation within the context of an evolving economy, and also just to demonstrate that the infrastructure is not outcomes neutral. It seeks to resolve a pertinent problem that is confronting us. It's a historic political problem. So we think that infrastructure provides an additional lever that will help us to resolve those questions. And then I'll run through a few of those, the plan itself. And at the end, I'll share with you issues around financing. And the reason why it is important for us to reflect on the financing question is because the fiscal headspace has been diminished, obliterated by the pandemic. I mean, we have redirected our resources to other more urgent needs. And also the relegation to sub-investment grade is making it difficult for us to raise money in the debt capital market. So it is important that we are able to explore and exploit new instruments of financing. So the next slide, the one that talks to South Africa, has deindustrialized. So really what the slide seeks to show, Chairperson, is that the economy has experienced high levels of tertiarization. I think the productive sectors are on the decline, and the decline here is computed as their share of total GDP. So you can see that since the victory of the Democratic Project, mining, in fact, has almost halved from 15% to 8.1% as a share of the total GDP. Agriculture, again, is significantly down, and the manufacturing has declined by 13%. I'm making this point so that there's an appreciation in the committee that our economic difficulties, the stresses that the economy is confronted with, are not as a result of the pandemic. The pandemic has accentuated an already existing distressed economic situation. So I'm saying there has to be that appreciation. Obviously, there has to be some degree of agency. We must be a bit bold and innovative in how we want to respond to this question. And again, the issue around employment, if you go to the slide of employment, really the Chair is just to, and members, to demonstrate that the economy has been hemorrhaging jobs. And this is, again, as a result of the decline in the productive sectors of the economy. And you can see that indeed, unemployment increased. We added an additional 2.3 million people into the range of the unemployed, and this is at 2019. And that 2019 is an important timeline, if you like, because it precedes the pandemic, it precedes the relegation to sub-investment grade, and really it seeks to reaffirm the point I made earlier on that our woes have little to do with the pandemic. Obviously now it's more accentuated. So in the response, it is important to appreciate that even before the pandemic, the economy was experiencing adverse headwinds. The fiscal matrix was deteriorating, and now it has deteriorated significantly. The revenue side is down, projected to be down by about 300 billion rand. And again, the debt to GDP deteriorated. I think we'll be approaching about 80% of that. So that is making it very difficult. So the degree of maneuverability, the room to maneuver, is a bit more constrained than it was the case before the advent of the pandemic. The slide that talks to the current economic reality, really, Chair, it speaks to the trends that we've been experiencing. So essentially there, you can see that general governments and also investment by state-owned enterprises have been on the decline. And this is important, Chair, because even outside us looking for new money, in relation to the existing allocations, there's been significant underspending, Chair and members. And you can see that over a period of 5 years, I think the underspending is sitting at about 147 billion rand. So if you were to round it off, let's say 150 billion rand over a span of 5 years. So it means that we've been underspending by approximately 30 billion rand per annum. It's a significant amount that, because it could have been used in those productive sectors, stimulating aggregate demand, and ensure that the supply side is resuscitated. Construction has experienced 7 consecutive quarters of negative growth, and we know that it has lost now about 14%, contracted by about 14%, again followed by manufacturing. So this is the state of the economy, even in relation to money that has been allocated to the state-owned enterprises, obviously, and general government. Obviously, there are both subjective and objective reasons why this underspending could be about the procurement, it could be about skills, could be about the whole range of reasons. But I think the aggregate picture is such that there has been significant underspending. Now I'll take you through the investment plan, really, Chair, which is the substance of the conversation today. I thought I must raise those questions just to frame the question, what is the problem statement? What is it that we are seeking to resolve so that we don't see the infrastructure investment plan independent of the emerging economic South African problem that requires our collective attention. Just on the infrastructure investment plan, the minister has spoken ad nauseum about the efforts of the president, obviously supported by the minister and the deputy minister, to ensure that we use infrastructure as a flywheel to help us with the recovery effort. Chair and members, honourable members, we identified what six priority sectors for intervention. The first four are what we call in aggregate terms the network industry. So that's the water, energy, ICT and transportation. The significance of these sectors is that they give us they have a higher multiplier effect, or if you like, job elasticity. They are able to open the economy, introduce greater efficiencies in the economy. They open new corridors. Municipalities are able to exploit innovative instruments like land-based financing mechanisms. They broaden the revenue flow. They are able to reinvest money back into those spaces. It helps us to ensure that we meet our aspirational targets of universal access. So that's the four. And then we added human settlement because we really want to attract private sector to help government in resolving the demand side. So the demand far outstrips supply in relation to low income human settlements, because in terms of the current dispensation, we are looking at the fiscus to finance that. And I just said that the fiscal headspace is diminishing, the matrix has deteriorated, so we need to look at new instruments. Let's incentivize the private sector to also participate, Honorable Chair, in this space, so that we're able to relieve the fiscus and we're able to deliver in the fastest possible time. And then we also introduce prioritize agriculture and agro-processing. What is the significance of that? In addition to its employment multiplier effect, the absorption capacity of agriculture, is if you design it deliberately and ensure that value addition happens upstream of the agriculture value chain. So you are able to ensure that you maximize value addition closer to centers of production, which is primary production, and these are typically our rural areas. and therefore you are able to create employment upstream of the value chain, and you stop people coming into urban areas, because really the rural urban migration is an economic question. So people are coming into the urban centers not because the urban center is attractive, but because of the pushing factors in the rural areas. There are no opportunities. Opportunities have diminished. So there's a perception that there's a concentration of opportunities in the urban centers. So all we are arguing is that then reconfigure that matrix and ensure that you are able to create the employment upstream. So you are reconfiguring the employment calculus, the economic calculus, and in that way you'll be able to resolve the questions going forward. And then we also think that we have paid little attention on maintenance of infrastructure, drive to the major cities, secondary cities, rural municipalities. You'll find there's potholes all over. Because the approach hitherto is that we build the road and then we go to the next project to build another road. And there's very little attention, resources, in form of money and skills that is invested at maintaining that asset. And we know that the replacement cost of an asset is exponentially higher than the maintenance cost. And then the next slide, is the one that speaks on the implementation of the plan. Really, we're looking at ensuring that we build this partnership. Solidification of the relationship with the social partners. You see, the resolution of the economic problem is not a government problem. It's a South African problem. And I think the sooner that we're able to bring everyone on board, community, labor, and the private sector to participate, obviously led by the state. And the state, the developmental state, must always be at the forefront of leading, but it has a responsibility to galvanize all of society around this. So the point we are making there is that there's a need for us to galvanize, and I think the minister has spoken about the need to build intelligence, ensure that there's spatial justice and the like. So I will not emphasize those. And then, like I said, on the key focus areas, and the next slide, really, Chair, Honorable Chair and Honorable Ministers, is to the members, is just to make the point that the focus of this infrastructure investment plan, one is to build a credible and robust project pipeline. Remember that for you to be able to ensure that the infrastructure is a flywheel that is going to lead the recovery effort, you must stimulate aggregate demand. So classic economic theory says you stimulate aggregate demand, you are going to resuscitate the supply side. So construction, manufacturing, all of that, they thrive on the existence of a demand that exists. You need to build roads. Therefore, there's aggregate. If you like, open cast mining will be up and running. There's bitumen. There's all kinds of things. There's yellow plant that is required. So industry is coming on board, and then you are able to create an employment going forward. So really, the focus is to ensure that we deal with that. I said the financing, I'll deal with it. And we are also waiting, the Chair and Honorable Ministers, members, on developing a long-term infrastructure plan for the country. I'll share that with you. And then the next slide really talks to what we call the infrastructure project process flow. The Minister makes a very telling point in her opening remarks, is that we have reconfigured the infrastructure universe in the public sector. So there's multiple disparate players across the public sector. So it's important that we are able to weave and align, coordinate all of these efforts so that we benefit from economics of aggregation. We are able to scale this, and we are able to exploit the limited resources to achieve the most out of it. So what are we doing? We're saying that you are creating a single window of entry with regards to infrastructure projects. So you are not usurping the functions of the SOEs. You are not usurping the functions of the line department. They continue to be the ones who sit with the mandates, the ones who will conceive of the projects, the ones who will articulate what the projects must do. But you need to create some resource that is going to help you to do project packaging and preparation, so that you get this project to bankability, so that you don't rely on the fiscals for funding, because I said the fiscals is under pressure. So you receive this project after they've been conceived, and then they come through a body called Infrastructure South Africa, a cabinet has resolved on the establishment of Infrastructure South Africa. For now, it is coordinated in the office, the IIO, the Investment and Infrastructure Office, DPWI, Budget Facility for Infrastructure, that is at National Treasury, the what was called the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Committee, the Technical Task Team. All of these skills, they come together around one table. Because, Honorable Chair, for you to package a project to a point where you are able to take it to the debt capital market or to use a blended financing mechanism, there are two principal skills that are indispensable. The one is the technical skills, and that is possessed by the engineers. The other one is the financial skills, is possessed by the accountants, by the economists, and all of that. Those skills must come together, talk to each other, and ensure that you are able to package the project better. Once we package that project, you can see there, it's taken to the Infrastructure and Investment Committee, presided by the minister. We have brought in private sector players and key public sector. They then make a determination on the basis of the proposals that are made by Infrastructure South Africa. There are three pathways. There are three ways of financing infrastructure. We've been burdening the fiscal as if it's the only sole source of financing. We say no. That's the third source. In fact, that's not your preferred source. The first source is that you must take it to debt capital market. So you have prepared the project, package it. It's underpinned by revenue streams. There's a cost recovery element. Take it to market, let the market fund it. Or if it doesn't have compelling cost recovery components, strong revenue streams, package it in a manner that you are able to take it to blended financing. Blended financing means the combination of public sector and private sector, the project gets going. Those that don't qualify for to go into those two baskets, then you take it to the fiscal, the national pairs, and then they get to compete with others. So exactly, that's what we were explaining there. And then really the next slide on South Africa's economic recovery plan, what the slide says, I will not necessarily go through the stages, is that when you think of funding a project, it must not be a transactional conversation. You mustn't ask the question, okay, you have an EIA, you have a record of decision EIA, there's a water use license, the designs are done, here's the money, go and build the asset. No. We argue that the first question you must ask is, to what extent does this infrastructure support the sovereign strategic goals? To what extent does it help us to achieve the aspirational targets of the National Development Plan, universal access, employment creation, broadening the manufacturing base, addressing spatial justice, ensure that we deal with all manifestations of inequality, the injustices of the past. To what extent does this asset do that? I made the point at the beginning, Chair, to say that infrastructure is not outcomes neutral. It's designed to achieve something. That's why the apartheid spatial morphologies deliberate. Place the poor far away from centers of economic production. Provide just roads for them to get from, those are labor reserves, they'll come to the centers of economic opportunities and go back to their enclaves, if you like. So you need to redesign that space. So infrastructure must do that. You must address the developmental goals, talk to issues of spatial justice. Like I said, I did make the point that you must have an interest of maintaining the assets going forward, and then broadening, if you like, the market for the country. So don't look at South Africa as a market in isolation to how we've been able to open up the African market through the Africa Continental Free Trade Area. Create a sufficient manufacturing base, industrial base, to allow these industrialists to then further exploit and export their products into the African market. So infrastructure must allow that to happen. First, to create a domestic demand, and then they build capacity, they build expertise, they innovate. Once they do that, they're able to search for new frontiers, new markets going into the future. And then you address issues of sustainability. We committed to the Sustainable Development Goals. And then the next slide really starts to say that we've been working for the past 6 months with the private sector to get to what the minister said is a symposium that took place, the Sustainable Infrastructure Development Symposium. We raised 340 billion. And so the minister, when she makes interviews, they say, no, but this is another talk shop. She was at pains that, no, it's not a talk shop. Now, to show that it's not a talk shop, we got 340 billion that the economy didn't have. So we didn't go to the fiscals. We went to the market because we invested in this skills, working with the private sector, package these projects. These projects were not going to see the light of day. But because we worked hard over that period, 340 billion rands of these projects have been funded. And like I said, it started with the slide that talks to building a credible infrastructure pipeline. We started by going to the SOEs. Remember, Honorable Chair, I said we focus on the network industry, human settlement, agriculture, and agro-processing. We mine these projects from the SOEs. We mine them from the private sector. We're able to work and package them. 88 of them were what we call post-feasibility. If you look at the project life cycle, you conceive of a project, you do preliminary studies, you know, limited information, we call it pre-feasibility. On the basis of that, you say, you know what, I think there's a case, this project can succeed. Then you go to a detailed analysis and collection of that information, analyze it, we call it feasibility. After that, you get it to bankability, get the funders. From there, you go on tender, you implement it, and you say, after that, you look after the asset. 88 of these projects were post feasibility. They were close to getting to financial close. The total value of these projects were 2.3 trillion rand. And then they had a funding gap of 502 billion. What I mean by a funding gap, there are other projects, especially human settlement, is a requirement that the municipalities must provide bulk infrastructure. The private sector brings the money for the top structure. We have financially engineered them so that they accommodate low-income households, so that the typology of the housing enhances our quest for social cohesion, inclusivity, and the like. But the local authority must provide bulk. Bulk is water, energy, is the wastewater treatment works, and then is the necessary road. So that's what we mean by the the funding gap. And then the next slide really talks about where these projects are. You can see that the more affluent provinces are the ones that are leading. So here I must make the point, the Honorable Chair and members, is that we are working with the you are more rural provinces that don't necessarily have the skills to help them to get the necessary skills so that we get projects to be properly packaged. You can't celebrate the fact that other provinces are doing exceptionally well and others are left behind. Otherwise, you are going to perpetuate this inequality, the urban-rural divide, that dichotomy that exists. Your rural-urban migration will continue unabated. So we need to ensure that we develop a polycentric country, that there's the centers of excellence and economic opportunity across all the geographies in the country. And then the next slide really talks to the 50 projects. That's what the minister has spoken about. We have gazetted this project. The gazetting process means that we are able to accelerate these projects. We get the licensing, permitting, and all the rights quicker than will normally be the case. And really the next slide, Chair, talks to the nature of this project. The first one, they talk to the water and sanitation projects. They are listed there. I don't have to go through all of them, but it's essentially about our quest for universal access. They are led by TCT, SOE, that is responsible for bulk in water infrastructure provision in the country. The next sector is transport. You can see is the national roads, ensure that there's a mobility, efficiency of the network, maintain, protect the asset, and those are really spearheaded by SANRAL. And then they're the ones that are about the technology innovation insights, that's the SANSA project. And then there are the ones that are about energy and ensure that we meet the energy mix as articulated in the integrated resource plan that Minister Mantashe has released. And then there are others that are in the human settlement space. I said some of these projects are existing. All we are doing, we are funding the future phases of these projects. And like I said here, the emphasis really, Chair, is on the bulk infrastructure provision. And then the next slide really talk to the special projects. The minister has spoken to this project. It's about new innovation, about technology, preparing us for the economy of the future. But the central theme of all these special projects is to ensure that we're able to create jobs and opportunities now in the immediate to help us recover from this effort. The next slide, Chair, talks to the national infrastructure plan. We don't necessarily have a national infrastructure plan. What we have is an aggregation of projects. So what we are doing now, a plan must talk to what are the priority sectors? What are the skills that are required to support those priority sectors? And how are you going to produce or scale up those skills? Thirdly is, how are you going to fund that plan? You are not going to just rely on the fiscus. You are going to rely on other instruments for funding. And then what are the necessary reforms, the legislative reforms that can give effect to this plan? We are working on it. We are confident, Chair, that and members, that by the next financial year, we'll be having the plan in place. We are engaging with the strategic partners. We are engaging, socializing this going forward. Then very briefly on the infrastructure fund, Chair, about 3 weeks ago, we launched we operationalize the infrastructure fund. What is an infrastructure fund? It's a 100 billion rand facility allocated over a period of 10 years that is going to help us to create what we call blended financing mechanism. So you bring private side, public sector side, we are prepared to take the first loss. We want to de-risk the project so that the private sector can come on board. That's what we mean. And in this way, we are going to accelerate the provision of infrastructure. Less reliance on the fiscals. That's an important part. We're looking at additional instruments, Chair, going forward. And the next slide really talks to what is a blended financing mechanism. I said it's about private and public sector coming together. You are de-risking the project. You are able to take it to financial close quicker. You are able to do more projects. You are able to scale up your build program. On the traditional, this is blended financing mechanism. That slide really talks to your traditional project finance structure. Typically, it will be 70% debt and 30% equity. Once we introduce a blended financing mechanism, it's going to be 50% is going to be debt, and the other 50% is first loss. So the private sector is now encouraged. There's greater incentives for them to participate, and in this way, we are able to invest in more projects. And then, Chair, just in conclusion, just to say to the members, we are looking at other financing instruments. Remember when I started, Honorable Chair, I said, let's relieve the fiscus. There are these instruments that are tried and tested. They exist in other parts of the world. So I'm not doing anything new. One of those is around the project bond. So a project bond, Chair, it typically means that when you finance a project, you don't look at a balance sheet of the project sponsor. You just look at the project in isolation and calculate what are the underpinning revenue streams. If those revenue streams are stronger, then you fund the project. So let me give you a typical example. You have ESCOM that is essentially a national debt problem, ESCOM. It's a sovereign debt problem. So if you look at the balance sheet of ESCOM, it's very poor, it has deteriorated. You are going to attract very few people who would want to invest in its projects. So all we are saying is that if they are retrofitting a power plant, they are retrofitting it, bringing in gas-powered turbines. So an investor just look at that power station alone in isolation to ESCOM's problem and sees that no, it's going to make sufficient money, and then you are able to invest in that project. That's all that we mean, Chair. The other one is green finance, green infrastructure bonds. We committed to the sustainable development goals. There's a big liquidity of cheap money in the market. The Green Climate Fund that was brought about by the agreement at the Paris Accord is $100 billion that is made available to the green transitioning. We must tap into that. We have not been tapping into those funds that are available globally. We're looking at the fiscus. Performance bonds is to help emerging black contractors. You know, when you do major projects, they insist that you must provide the guarantees. And that is a form of exclusion, because many of these black contractors are not able to enter into very attractive, lucrative
lucrative projects, because they can't produce project guarantees. We say we must introduce project bond, including the BEE funding. And then we say there has to be a significant allocation to project preparation. Before all of these things, you can exploit this instrument. Remember what I said earlier on, package the project. You need the financial and the technical engineering skills. Typically, you need to invest anything between 1 to 4% of the total value of the project in some projects. In more complicated projects, you need to invest 10 to 12% of the total value of the project in project preparation, and this is going to help us to ensure that we relieve the fiscals, we get the economy going, we get construction going, manufacturing going, create the necessary jobs, and we are closer to meeting our aspirational targets of the NDP. And really the last slide, Chair, is just to say that we have made progress, we have operationalized the infrastructure fund, the national infrastructure plan I just shared with the Chair, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, to be ready before the next financial year. We have already started with that work. We are doing implementation of this project. The project, the 50 projects that I mentioned, Minister mentioned, we are launching some of them now in September. Some of them are ready to go on tender. The emergency power procurement has already gone out already last week. We have attracted that funding. You have seen. So all I'm saying is that it was not a talk shop. We're able to deliver, and we're confident that we'll make progress. As the minister said, we're committing through the guidance of the minister, Chair, to come in and give you a report back with regards to progress. Thank you very much, Chair, and apologies for being long.
Thank you, Dr. Ramakopa, for the manner in which we are able to make the presentation much more clear and much more understandable. We will now take this opportunity to engage with the presentation. What we'll then probably do just to I see the minister.
Yes.
Raise their hand. Over to you, Minister.
Yes, I just want to round up, Chair, to inform the honourable members, you know, what we have done in the past 2 months and where are we now in terms of some of the operational matters. Like Dr. Ramakopa said, you know, the infrastructure fund announced by the President in 2018 is now operational, and so that's one of our achievements. Dr. Ramakopa referred to the development of the National Infrastructure Plan, that's work in progress. Then the oversight and monitoring of the implementation of the strategic integrated projects. We have established a strategic infrastructure coordinating committee that is being established. We've done the first phase of the infrastructure plan, which is the 62 strategic infrastructure projects, and we're now busy looking at the second phase. We have done a number of investor roadshows to mobilize financing for infrastructure projects, and that's ongoing. We were very pleased with the response. Then a person last week or so put up an advertisement for a technical advisory committee. And the response, we want this technical advisory committee to also help us with the implementation of the plan. We had a very good response, I think over 900 applications that we have received. Chairperson, we've also developed a social facilitation plan because, you know, we know about this plan, but what is our community? What is the people on the ground that will be the beneficiaries of these infrastructure projects? What do they think? So we have developed a social facilitation methodology, and I'm sure members of parliament can join us also when we do the first social facilitation with communities to give the communities the information, We want the communities to be our eyes and ears. We want to make sure that the communities benefit from this, that we've got local contractors, local people benefiting. So that is also something that we've introduced now to make sure that all South Africans own this land. Then, Chairperson, the establishment of Infrastructure South Africa is currently with the Department of Minister Sunu, DPSA. It's currently with them, and it's in its final stages where DPSA will has helped us to establish the structure, and that's work in progress. And then also, you know, to seek a green infrastructure bond, we're also in the process of going out to look for green infrastructure bonds, so that's also work in progress. And like I've said, the quarterly report will go to Cabinet in October. And on the issue of corruption, Chairperson, corruption is very topical nowadays, but we all know it has become institutionalized in our country. And the market is very sensitive, investors is very sensitive to allegations of corruption. And therefore, we need to put the systems in place that can prevent and detect corruption. So in all of these major infrastructure projects that we've now presented, we will have an outside company that can do due diligence on every step of the tender process, of the procurement process. There will be outside involvement to make sure that one, that we follow due process, secondly, that the contract gets allocated to the deserving company. So that is one of the measures that we are putting in place to deal with the issue of corruption. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you once again for the opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you, thank you, thank you, Minister, for wrapping up and rounding up the presentation that you led, and which was then chaired by Dr. Ramakopa, presentation on South Africa's infrastructure investment plan, taking us through a number of areas from the economic realities and also laying before us the infrastructure investment plan, how do they see this credible infrastructure pipeline being constructed, and also ensuring that indeed there is a clarity of thought given to strategic implementation, strategic infrastructure projects, and how those projects will be financed, and then a number of steps that will be taken in future. In a nutshell, that is how the presentation was characterized. I will now open the floor to honorable members. Let me start with honorable guys. Are you able to, honorable team?
Yes, sir, I do have some questions.
All right. Okay. Let's give over to team, and then I'll then give over to other honorable members.
Chair, thank you. Chair, with your indulgence, I'm going to leave my camera off. We have the load shedding at the moment, and so I'm just working with the signal on my phone. Chair, I do appreciate this presentation, but the Minister will agree that this presentation is largely, at the moment, blue sky. And what concerns me about the presentation, number one, is that if we refer to page 8 of the presentation, and I picked this up when I prepared for today, is that it refers to April 2020, and it refers to a 5-week period of COVID. So it appears that this presentation is actually quite old. And so my first question is why were we not given an up-to-date presentation which included the updates which the Minister provided today? I think it's very difficult to deal with a presentation if it isn't up-to-date. that we actually have it on record and can look at it. Then secondly, Chair, we have spent about an hour on the presentation today, and that leaves us about 2 hours to engage with something that is incredibly massive and very complex. And I do know that my portfolio committee colleagues today are engaging in a workshop, a day-long workshop about this matter, or an extended workshop, I would imagine. And I certainly feel that we need to engage either as a joint committee with the portfolio committee on a extensive workshop on this particular investment plan, because it is very big and very, very complex. It cannot be done in 3 hours. Chair, the other question I have, and this is where the Minister and I have engaged and other members have engaged, is Infrastructure South Africa. There is still a lot of a lack of detail about how that's going to be set up, how the entity will work, and who is being recruited to run that entity. It's absolutely vital that we know who the persons are, because that feeds into the next point, which is about corruption. Now, the Minister won't like this, but, you know, the current ongoing Bite Bridge issue highlights that corruption can happen everywhere, and it's happening in her department at the moment. So what level of assurance do we have that going into a multi-trillion rand plan, they're not going to have a massive amount of corruption going on? That is something that is very, very important. Then, Chair, second to last point, the Technical Advisory Committee. I don't know if the Portfolio Committee have been advised about this, but we certainly haven't. We need to know what the specifications are for people to apply for this Technical Advisory Committee, and surely we should have sight of who has applied, and certainly have a sight of a shortlist, so that we can be involved somehow in the appointment of the right people to do the right job on a Technical Advisory Committee. Otherwise, we can have people that are spuriously known as political advisors and political officers on an advisory committee. What we need there is engineers. They can only be engineers. And then finally, Chair, my last issue. Where is the money going to come for all of this? And one of the biggest issues we have with investment in South Africa right now is the massive issue of policy uncertainty. There is no policy certainty at the moment on the expropriation of that compensation. People have no, investors have no confidence that they will come in, build certain items, and then that they won't be nationalized at some point. It is absolutely essential, one way or the other, that we get policy certainty. Otherwise, investors are going to turn away. That is why, as the presentation clearly points out, the construction sector has declined dramatically. No one wants to build, Chair, until they have certainty as to what's going to happen with their investment. We have to acknowledge that. And then finally, what I'm sitting with right now, load shedding. If we don't sort the Eskom problem out once and for all, we will not have a situation where reliable electricity supply can be one of the driving engines of this investment plan. So, Chair, those are just the issues I wanted to raise. Thank you so much for your indulgence. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Minister, Honorable Tango.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, the one assumption I have a problem with is that...
Can I just request Honorable Dango just to correct the screen so that at least you can be visible, Honorable Dango? Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Chairperson, the one issue that I have a problem with is the assumption that... is the assumption that migration from rural areas to urban areas is going to stop. Throughout the world, the experience has been thus far that they've not been able to stop that, and that the planning must take into account that particular issue, that money is going to have to be spent in the urban areas as well as the rural areas. Because people are going to continuously migrate because jobs are there, factories go there. In an agricultural situation, it becomes a bit different, but throughout the world, the experience has been that. Two is the money and the cost of money. South Africa is its own worst enemy. I've been out there trying to find investments. And every time you go and try and find investments, the negative sentiments that come from our own people put off the people that in fact want to invest. Having said that, Minister, I think we should start looking at funding from different sources. Maybe we should start looking at the sovereign wealth funds in the Gulf countries. They have been working in some parts of Africa. And maybe look at that kind of thing so we can cost that in on a different way. Having said that, thank you very much, Minister.
Thank you, Honorable Tango. Raul Boshoff.
Thank you very much, Chair. Please pardon me for not switching on the video. We also struggling with load shedding. Good afternoon, Minister. Yes, thank you very much for the presentation. And I just want to echo the sentiments of my colleague, Honorable Basse, with regard to the late presentation and giving us old information and having it buffed up today. We understand that underspending is a huge problem. We were told last today that 147 billion over 5 years, which equates to about 30 billion per annum. Could you please explain to us how this will be addressed going forward? Because we know that with the underspending comes huge job losses. So many jobs could have been created had this money been spent properly. And then I'd also like to be given an explanation on how funds will be dispersed to our local municipalities and our provinces, and what monitoring mechanisms are in place. Going through the presentation, I also see that there would appear to be loopholes in the supply chain management. What are you going to do to put measures in place to eradicate it and possible corruption? As Honorable Barstow said, we are all aware that the construction industry is also one of the most important, but also one of the most corrupt industries, and this must be stopped because it's taxpayers' money that is being wasted. The plan that was presented to us, could you also provide us with the timelines with every single plan that is being put out? And then, Minister, you spoke about the Tender and Procurement Committee, if I may call it. That will be an external committee that is to be appointed or has already been appointed. How were they vetted? Who is this company and who decided on this external committee, company, or whatever it is called? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Bashoff. Honorable Khai. Honorable Apleni. Okay, Honorable Khai. You are not very audible. Okay. Let's probably pass you for now. When the connectivity is in order, we'll then definitely revert back to you. Honorable Apleni.
Thanks, Chair. There is not much that I would like to raise. Indeed, the issue of the infrastructure is a very serious problem. And as we all know, that much of the infrastructure that we have was actually designed for the few, and that is why it's not coping for all of us. You know, if you go around the townships, you would always find the water leakages and sewage leakages and all of that. So it's a very good around the issue of, you know, there is always a mention whenever you hear about huge projects that are coming, you'd always find the issue of 30% when it comes to black businesses, the local black business, they would always get around 30% of the project. And then those big, well-established businesses, mostly owned by white people, they would always get a huge chunk, which at times one would see it as disadvantaging black businesses from growing. But another thing that I was thinking, I think the minister is looking at, is the issue of phasing in the state capacity. You know, when I grew up, I used to see the, when you see the, mostly those machines which work around the road, you would know that those were owned by the Department of Public Works. But today, whenever you see them, you know that these are owned by mostly the private companies. I'm thinking of the state, where the state is. You know, I, on Friday, I actually borrowed my wife's car and I drove to the Transkei area. Came back this morning. I'm not looking forward to see her because it's like her car is dragging empty things. The quality of the roads. Those are the huge problems that we are facing. So I'm thinking that if the government would at least phase in the state capacity, some of the things which we actually give them to tenders and all of those tender entrepreneurs or whatever we call them, you would find that the state would actually do much better job than some of those companies. So I do think that somewhere we need to try and have, for instance, the department, it should be able, you see, it's a white elephant building with everything, people employed, but you don't see anything that is being done. You pass through a pothole for 3 or 6 months, and those people are passing through, are driving through those potholes as well. Nothing is being done. So somewhere we need to phase in the state capacity. The state must be able to do some of the things that we are actually giving to tender entrepreneurs and all of those things. But another thing that I think it would be very important is to look at the issue of young people, especially the women, around those when such projects are coming, so that they can be able to be much beneficiaries of such a project. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Apleni. Is Honorable Lund on the platform? Honorable Lund? Can you try Honorable Khai again? Honorable Khai? Honorable Lundsman? Honorable Khai, can you try you again? Unmute yourself. Can you just unmute yourself? Can Honorable Khai unmute himself, please? We can hear you, Honorable Khai. You have muted yourself. Thank you. Of course, the challenge is that you have muted yourself, so we don't know whether it's a problem related to connectivity. Okay, that's fine. Thank you, Honorable Khai. Honorable Minister, let me then probably just also return some participating question, but let me start by appreciating the presentation that you have made, and also the work that was also then presented by Dr. Ramukopa, just to
to buttress the framework that we have outlined. Just in terms of the amendment to the Infrastructure Development Act, I just want to get a sense in terms of when will that happen, because I think going through the act, it works from the premise that this work remains in the Department of Economic Development, so in most of the sections of that act that deals with infrastructure, it makes reference to the transfer of the it makes reference to the Department of Economic Development, but also to the Minister of Economic Development. So I think it's a matter that we need to pay attention to. But I suspect the minister has already taken that and that they are working on it. The second point relates to the fact that indeed the correctly so as pointed out by both the minister and Dr. Ramakhuba, the National Development Plan was very clear in terms of how we need to deal with this matter, and it indicates that we need to. For us to be able to meet the developmental agenda, it would need to boost infrastructure investment by 30% as a percentage of the GDP by 2030. And therefore, the work that we are doing definitely is the building pillars of our commitment to this plan. And we are also mindful of the target that has been set in the past. In the past 10 years, I think the period between 1998 to 2018-19, the government was able to invest 3.2 trillion on infrastructure spending. So I think it is quite critical to appreciate the fact that there is history in terms of how we can be able to deal with this matter, and appreciating the fact that also that in terms of the 2020 medium term, government is anticipating to spend 815 billion on infrastructure. But I think there are a number of red lights that probably we need to engage the minister and Dr. Ramakhuba on, particularly around a general understanding across all three spheres, which we need to pay attention to, and just to get clarity in terms of the commitment from the leadership in terms of what is this that can be done to make sure that both skills and expertise is infused in our three spheres, just to ensure that we are able to confront this underspending pattern, which definitely has been identified also by State South Africa. But I think certainly the other question that one want to get guidance on is the point that Dr. Ramakhuba has indicated around a single window of coordination when it comes to infrastructure. But of course, appreciating the fact that this is a process, what will be key is though the minister has indicated that this matter in terms of the infrastructure entity is still with the Department of Public Service Administration. I think what is critical is it says that with the transfer of the function from the Department of Economic Development,
what is going to happen to the warm bodies? Is there an anticipation that, given the work that they have done in the last 5 years, particularly given the fact that the expectation is that those six programs and projects that were running from both the fourth and the fifth administration continues to run. What is the progress in terms of ensuring that there is a seamless transition in terms of the transfer function? Appreciating the fact that the president also in his State of the Nation address has put much more emphasis in terms of ensuring that the infrastructure is used to also ignite the economic growth, and whether are there any transfer is funds following the function. I think that is quite critical, so that at the level of institutional capacity, there is no disruption in terms of that transition and in terms of the transfer function. But also, how do we ensure that there is a smooth coordination between the department and also the office led by Dr. Ramakgopa? Thank you, Honorable Minister. I'm about to check as to whether Honorable Khai is back again. Over to you, Minister.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson, I think that it must deal with your question first, which is very important of the issues that you raised there, because we've got the plan and the strategy and structure followed. And that's exactly what I was explaining earlier on, that the work in progress. The first point, Chairperson, that you raised about the amendment to the Infrastructure Development Act of 2014, that amendment has been made on the 23rd of August 2019 in a government gazette where the president also, in the same gazette, transferred the PICC, the Presidential Infrastructure Commission Technical Task Team, to DPWI, and the president also transferred the IDMF system, the Infrastructure Development Mechanism system that was based in National Treasury, it has also been transferred, and so that happened in August of 2019. The other process, Chairperson, is that is also raised, what is outstanding with the Infrastructure Development Act is the regulation. Because since the Act was enacted in 2014, no regulations have been designed for the Infrastructure Development Act. And that process is also work in progress. We had to bring in an outside service provider through the Policy Research and Regulation Unit within DPWI, and that is also now work in progress. It is not being completed yet. Then the other structural issue that you raised, Chairperson, is that this infrastructure project will be delivered over a number of financial years. So what we are looking at, we have got your medium strategic framework for 5 years, and then of course you've got the annual performance plan, and that is how the project will be broken down to put into the annual performance plan and into the 5-year MSPF. There are a number of existing structures, Chairperson. First of all, if you look at the Infrastructure Development Act, you have got a structure called the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Council. And that council is chaired by the President, and it is representative of ministers, deputy ministers, premiers, district mayors, also metro mayors. And the council had its first meeting about a month or so ago. So that's another part of, there's another structure where consultation will be happening. Then there's another structure called the Presidential Coordinating Committee, where again, the president consults with premiers, mayors, FOCTA is also coordinating that. So from time to time, you know, all of these plans and all of the focus will be reported in those structures. Another structure, Chairperson, is what we call the MINMAC meeting, where the national minister meets on a quarterly basis with all the MECs for public works and infrastructure on a quarterly basis. So those are all the existing structures, and this is where we are discussing all of these plans, and we get input from everyone. Because what is important, Chairperson, for this plan to succeed is the cooperation between the three spheres of government. And that the three spheres of government collectively have got, for instance, the responsibility that we deal with one member raised about, I think it's Honorable Bosoff, about understanding. Because we are not going to spend the money for the 3 years of government. They still have got the responsibility to spend that money. And what can arise from the research that we have done, Chairperson, that we've seen one of the key reasons why we have got these major underspends in all 3 years of government is because we have never really in the past put a lot of emphasis and attention to project preparation. So if the preparation is not done properly, then you're not able to pick up the stumbling block that might come out. And therefore the emphasis now on project preparation right up front, and we need to invest more money in project preparation so that we can avoid underspend. But we can also then de-risk a project by doing a project preparation. So that is one of the mechanisms that we've now put in place, project preparation to assist us the understanding. The portfolio committee is workshopping, and this is an idea that I've shared with the portfolio committee on public works and infrastructure. That, you know, it will be good that they workshop the Infrastructure Development Act, because all of what we are doing, Chairperson, is underpinned by and is guided by the Infrastructure Development Act, because we must operate within the framework of the law. I will come back. I will just give Dr. Ramaphosa to answer some of the technical and financial questions, and then I will come back, Chairperson, with your permission to answer the other questions. But your input is so important, Chairperson, because that is the foundation from which we are trying to build. Thank you, Chairperson. Dr. Ramaphosa.
Thank you, Minister. Over to you, Doctor.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thanks, Minister. Let me start from just the real thesis of the work that we're doing. I had made the point earlier on that we are freeing the fiscals of having to fund this project, because the question was raised, where will this money come from? This is money that is invested by the private sector. It's not coming from the national purse. I think it's an important point to make there. So the 340 billion build program that we're talking about, it's all sponsored by private sector. So like I said, we did project preparation packaging, took them to a market sounding exercise, what we call the pitching sessions, and that culminated in the symposium. And then the Honorable Chair, the private sector then placed their money on this project. So that's the first part. And then another question is that, no, but this is a pie in the sky. No, nothing could be further from the truth. I did mention, Honorable Chair, that we are launching some of the project next month in September. This is the biggest post-apartheid settlement in the country. The 45,000 unit development in Mooikloof, the second most sought after address in Tshwane, after Waterkloof is Mooikloof. So all the planning is done. So the money is raised by the private sector player from all the four banks. So all we needed to do was to unlock the bulk with the city of Tshwane. And that money now has been made available, Honorable Chair. And then the project is being launched. I made the point that on 2,000 megawatts emergency power procurement, you had seen it, it went out last week, but the commitment from private sector to fund is already in place. I had made the point that on almost all of the 90% of the housing projects that we have listed, these are projects that are going into the subsequent phases, phase two. The money is on the table, and these projects are ongoing. I had made mention that with regards to the SANRAL projects, what SANRAL did was to do the technical design for the national roads, outside the ones that requires debt reprofiling. Did the technical roads, some of them a design rather, some of them is improvement of or introduction of new interchanges on the national roads. Completed the technical designs, went out on tender, got what the prices are, worked with us, went out to the debt capital market, got the money from the MDBs. All we need for SANRAL projects to happen is what we call credit enhancing instruments. What is that? Is the sovereign guarantee for SANRAL, and then for TCTA, for the bulk water infrastructure, is the raising of the borrowing limits. We are going through the processes of government, the discipline of the fiscal framework. It's sitting with the Assets and Liability Committee of National Treasury. We have briefed them. We are happy we are on the same wavelength. It goes to Minister Tito Mboweni. Once Minister Tito Mboweni says yes, we are then giving them the guarantee. I had said the tender is out. All that SANRAL does is to go back to the contractor because of the time span from the point of issuing the tender and the appointing to establish with the contractor is the price still valid. So there's nothing called pie in the sky here. These things are happening. And that's the point I made earlier on. It's not the rhetoric. It's something that is happening on the ground. The question is, who is the technical advisory committee? It must be engineers. No, nothing could be further from the truth again. Technical working committee, advisory committee is exactly that. This advisory committee, Honorable Chair, we went out, we go out, look for professionals, identified areas of intervention, the green economy, and the issues around financing, project financing, social facilitation, all of that. You don't need only engineers to build infrastructure. And this is a theory that has led us to where we are. You need people with a financing background to help us to package a project. We need people with social facilitation skills. When the project is supposed to land in a community, socialize the project. There are multiple projects across the country that has been stopped because communities were not involved. So it's an exercise in social engineering, engagement with communities. So we're looking for all the skills. So once we have this advisory panel, they are not about procurement, because I think there was a point raised. It's not about procurement. When we need a skill on the green economy, because we can't have all these skills outside, we go to someone on the panel that we have selected to say, please work with us on the green economy. Please work with us on packaging this project. Please work with us on social facilitation, all of that. So that's the point that I thought I must make. And then the issue around urban rural, no. Let me make my point. If you look at urbanization in the global north, that urbanization was on the back of massive industrialization. So what do I mean? People were moving from the rural areas, they're moving to the urban centers of modern developed countries, going into employment. So there was, an attraction into those spaces. Let's come to the global south, and South Africa is part of that aggregate. The movement of rural to urban is not, people are not coming into Tshwane, they are not going to Cape Town, they are not going to
eThekwini, they are not going to Johannesburg and finding jobs. That's why you have proliferation of informal settlement. People are coming into these centers because of the pushing factors in the rural areas, that the economy almost doesn't exist. They are looking for new opportunities coming into this center. The simple point that we are making, that whilst urbanization is a given, you can tone down the rate of urbanization by bringing opportunities closer to where people are. And the best way of doing it is to ensure that value addition around primary commodities and primary production happens closer to centers of economic production. But to fold your arms and say, no, it's a given, it's an unhelpful conversation. What we need to do is to ensure that the urban spaces become thriving economic spaces in their own way. They will in no way match the urban centers because of the kind of infrastructure that is available and all other social considerations. The kind of schooling that you find in the rural areas compared to the urban centers might be different. The level of densities, movement and commuting is shorter in the urban centers. You are unlikely going to replicate it in the rural areas. Those ones are a given. But the others, the state can't hold its arms. The state is not a neutral player. The state is an active participant in the economy, must drive the economy towards the direction of at least the governing party, how they see the future going forward. And then I agree with Honorable Member Apleni. So part of the work that we're doing is that we've been advised by Cabinet is that there has to be qualitative transformation of both the ownership and productive pattern. What do you mean? Can't just be a small 30% there, and by luck the communities get 30%. It must be by design, it must be ambitious, and we're arguing that it could be substantially more than 50%. And then the second part is that is those social actors that must benefit out of this. Cooperatives, women-owned businesses, youth-owned businesses, who are working with small and medium, the Department of Small and Medium Enterprises, we are also working with the Department of Men, of Women, Youth, to ensure that all of this thing is coordinated. So that's the point that I needed to make. And then with regards to a single window, yes, I think the minister has responded to that. So all that we are doing is that our colleagues who are largely engineers who are at the PICC have been integrated in this new way of doing things. Our colleagues who are with National Treasury, Budget Facility for Infrastructure, who are largely accountants and economists, have been integrated in this. So although that the legal form is still going through these processes, but through our conduct check is that we've been working together, we're coordinating this, and once you sign off is legal, you find that we continue in the manner that the spirit that we've been able to do this work. And I guess it will be more deliberate. It will have greater levels of legitimacy because it would have received a sign-off from the minister responsible. And then that's a branch that will be created within DPWI. And in parallel to that, we are working on the legal form of Infrastructure South Africa. And that is a process that can take a bit more time. And once we have that legal form, again, you migrate into Infrastructure South Africa, which is outside, if you like, DPWI. It's not a branch within DPWI. It's at an arm's length. It's got some degree of autonomy to ensure that we discharge infrastructure bail program in the country. We are able to prosecute the responsibilities in the most efficient fashion. We are able to attract the kind of the most sought after skills, which don't come cheap, by the way. And it's part of what I think is Honorable Apleni and what the chair had raised, the need to ensure that you build the capacity of the country. And in this instance, it's on two fronts. It's on the technical skills, which is ordinarily your engineering, the built environment skills, and it's also on the financial engineering skills, which is your economist, which is also your financial people with a financial disposition. And then you also build the social skills. So one of the additional dimensions we are bringing into this body is the need for us to have an understanding and an interpretation. Once we have produced this asset, what has been the social conditions before, what has been the social conditions after. And that's why in that technical advisory panel, no, we are not just looking for engineers. We are a bit more bold, we are innovative, future-looking, we are looking for technocrats in the areas of economy, finance, and social engineering. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Doctor.
Minister?
Yes, Honourable Chair, sorry, my apology, I didn't answer the last part of your question about the warm bodies. I want to assure you that we've not lost any one of the warm bodies. What Dr. Ramakgopa has just explained is just this organic get-together of the warm bodies, whether they're in the PICC Technical Task Team, or in GTEC, or in the budget facility, or within DPWI. On Friday, I was in Pretoria, and I had an opportunity to meet some of these warm body chairpersons, and I was very impressed. I met about different professionals, you know, and highly qualified people, all young, most of them young, let me put it that way. And more than half of the part of the team that I met on Friday are women. So it is just so good to see, you know, how everybody has come together to mobilize and rally behind the plan. Because we also have to respect people's existing conditions of employment, chairperson. We have to respect their existing performance agreements, their existing performance targets. And so we've got a transitional mechanism that we've established where people can raise those issues. But everything has been going very, very smoothly. Everybody is very excited about the plan. And there's a new form of energy that has emerged, Chairperson. I'll quickly just go to some of the questions asked by the honourable members. On the Technical Advisory Committee, the advertisement appeared in newspapers over last weekend, but we've also put out an advert on social media, and we can certainly provide the committee with a copy of that advertisement. Then the issue raised by Honourable Dango and addressed by Dr. Ramakgopa, the issue of urbanisation is happening all over the world. By 2050, more than 70% of the world's people will live in cities. And that's why in the infrastructure investment plan, we consider urbanisation in all aspects and the impact of urbanisation, especially on infrastructure, without ignoring our rural areas. So there is that balance. Then there was a question around external companies to do the due diligence. The external company was appointed last year already by the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure. And so the internal auditors and the external auditors of the department has already briefed this committee to look at the procurement issues around all the projects that have been presented to their person. So they are on board and they were appointed last year. The issue about the 30% threshold for preferential procurement. Now, again, as we all know, that 30% is in the 2017 regulations of Treasury, but there is an opportunity now with the new procurement bill that is up for public participation, where there's a review around all of these percentages, and certainly the honourable members of Parliament will also have an opportunity. The bill is before Parliament now, and to make an input there. And propose any changes there. The update with our roads across the country, Chairperson, is that roads are divided into upkeep and maintenance. Some roads are municipal roads, some roads are regional roads, some of them are national and provincial roads. And there is a fragmentation where, you know, different spheres of government are responsible for different roads within our communities. And this is what we are trying to coordinate now, especially around the issue of potholes. I mean, it's across our country, but it's different responsibilities. So we hope to bring all of the three spheres of government together and see how we can manage the issue of road maintenance. Regarding the skills and capacity, I always maintain, Chairperson, that this lack of capacity in government has become an excuse for inefficiency. I think, first of all, we do have skills in our country. Our problem is that we don't always recognize those skills. So we are busy to put together a database where we are putting on, in the database, unemployed professionals, unemployed young people that are professionals, also including retired professionals. And then we are looking at across government and entities of government. There are a number of empowerment programs, like the CIDG, a Council for the Built Environment, all of those entities. So we are now looking and seeing, let us have one database that we can draw from and get them involved in the rollout of the infrastructure and the infrastructure plan. So, Chairperson, if there's anything that I've missed, members can certainly ask me a further question, or I can answer later on if there's still time left. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. I just want to check whether on the chat there is no question from Honourable Matebula. He usually poses the questions from the on the chat. I don't see any message, but I think if Honourable members agree, indeed there is now a clarity of thought in terms of where we are going. This is the beginning on the part of the both the minister and Dr. Ramakgopa from the president's office to keep us on board in terms of where we are in terms of the infrastructure development as a critical component of igniting our economy, and we must indeed appreciate the fact that the route that they have outlined before us follows a number of examples across the globe, from China to Canada, United States, UK, particularly given the challenges that is facing us. And I think what is critical from this meeting is the fact that all hands are on deck in terms of how the infrastructure development plan was articulated. The fact that there are all three spheres that are integral part of this program, the state-owned entities. But more than that, I think moving from the appreciation that there has been a steady decline of infrastructure spending, and that there is a need and a commitment from the team to change that, we are leaving this meeting mindful and also clear that there is an infrastructure investment office in the presidency that is working hand in glove with the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure. This infrastructure investment office in the presidency led by Dr. Ramakgopa, they have established a methodology that has been conceptualized, and as a result thereof, it has led to the establishment of the Infrastructure South Africa, a new institution, which as a result thereof led to the Sustainable Infrastructure Development Symposium methodology, which is a direct result of this entity. But more than that, I think what is quite critical also is that the ESA takes over the technical functions of both the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Committee and also the National Treasury's Budget Facility for Infrastructure in respect of project identification, preparations, packaging,
and promotion to create a comprehensive project. I think that was quite clear from the presentation, and that has led to what is called the infrastructure, the projects that are identified under strategic integrated project.
Mm-hmm.
And we were informed that the SIP process already has identified 276 projects. And out of that 276 projects, focus now is on 88, and the provincial spread of this project were laid before us, and as a result thereof, we are looking forward to progress on this brilliant work that is headed by both the presidency and the minister, and we are also looking forward to getting a quarterly report, honorable minister, in terms of progress that we are making. I think what is key is the fact that 88 of this project has been gazetted, and the gazette put us in a much more formidable position to through concerted effort to drive this program. We know that it's not going to be easy, but the fact that we are on the right track, mindful of the fact that obviously with the COVID impact on this program might be significant, might be devastating, but we are inspired by the passion that has been displayed in today's presentation. And on those few words, I think let's let me again on behalf of the select committee express our gratitude to the leadership that has been displayed today. What we want to do is to probably then excuse the minister and the team so that we are able to deal with the in-house rules. But your last word, Minister.
Chairperson, once again, thank you for the opportunity, and to all the honourable members, thank you for your input. It will certainly enhance us. I must say that this is a very ambitious project that we are taking on. It is a first for our country, and we will all learn together. And that is why we open for advice from all the honourable members. There is a shared link in the chat now, Chairperson, for the Google Form link. It's the link that we have established for the public and everyone to give feedback and input to us all the time. And I will also encourage members, to circulate that Google shared link for us to receive further input. But we will commit Chairperson to come and give the committee an update on a quarterly basis. But even if there's anything in between that honourable members would like to know, we can certainly respond to it. But we also not operating outside of the annual budget process, the APC, the performance, I mean my own performance agreement that the President has set for the Minister. And then just lastly, as you were saying, that DPSA is in the final stages because that is their mandate to establish a structure within government. And once we have got some progress on that, I will certainly write to the Honourable Chairperson and give you an update. So thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. Thank you, Dr. Kutin Soramukoba. You are allowed to excuse us. Committee Secretary?
Thank you, Chair Pepper.
Let's deal with the minutes of the last meeting.
Chair Pepper.
Or should we decide on
the minutes to members? My apology. Thank you, Chairperson. the announcements around the two bills is in relation to the issue to advertisement. Because members should know that in terms of the constitution, NCOP also we are obligated, you know, to conduct public participation. So what we did, we had four quotations in all official languages, and the total amount per bill came to 200,000. We consulted with the legal advisor to check whether it is necessary to spend 200,000 in this kind of a bill, which are more technical. So the legal advisor proposed that it would be better to advertise this bill only in two national newspapers. So that's what we are taking to the committee chairperson.
Thank you. Of course, we are mindful of the fact that that is too administrative, but I think it is important that we take, we just inform members in terms of what we are going through. I don't think it's a matter for discussion, just thought let's inform our members. We will then probably find a way to ensure that in our constituency, this bills somehow we find a way to deal with it. Any indication from another members? Because I thought this is too administrative, but it's important that at least we just inform members in terms of what are the cost implications of advertising those bills in all our community newspapers. Maru Basho? Tim? Any view on this?
Chair, are these the bills related to the transport bills?
Chairperson? Yes, the ASA bill and the Air Traffic and Navigation Company Service. Yes, the transport bill.
Chair, if I can then respond, look, those bills I think are pretty much of national importance. And I believe they then should be advertised as suggested in a couple of national newspapers, not necessarily to all community newspapers. They are the stakeholders in that are a lot higher than you know, grassroots community level. I think that if the legal advisors are happy, then just go with the national newspaper.
Good. Thank you, Honorable Tim, for that guidance. Any other view? Honorable Khai? Yeah, no, you are not audible again. Silence, Honorable Chair. You must go back to just in case, because just in case he sabotages you. Thank you, honourable members. Let's then take this opportunity to express my gratitude on behalf of all of you for this successful meeting on the briefing on the investment infrastructure investment plan, which obviously we hope that there will be a constant update to the team and the committee. And let me also express gratitude to the committee secretary, Dr. Sipeka, and the big help of our researchers, and the media, and the guests that we have. And with those few words, the meeting is now adjourned. Thank you, honorable members. The meeting is closed.
Wonderful. Honorable Khai, it's only chance I got you one is in the saloon, the papa shop.
Thank you,
Chair. Thank you, Chair. Bye-bye.